Football 52, episode number 18, with head football coach of the UNC Bears, Ed Lamb. It's me, Brady Hull. And I'm on the countdown to episode 20, Coach. I don't know why, but it's something that means something to me. I like that number. I'm excited for it. But episode 18, we're grinding through it. It's June 5th as we record this thing. It's going to be hot this week.
For me, I think we've passed the halfway mark, counting from the first week we started, or at least kind of in my mind, when we brought the players back in early January. We're halfway to the season. Yeah, or over halfway. And so I think that's a big mark for the players, because the off season is long. In one sense, it all happens so quickly. Like you enroll in classes in January, you start training. It was really rigorous training all through January, probably the most rigorous time. And not only that, guys are kind of battling through the snow and the ice and the cold to get to weightlifting and running on time, and we're going out and running whenever we can, even if the field is kind of only partially clear. So that's a long grind, and I just think that passing that halfway mark is a real indication to the guys of, oh, geez, January, in one sense, it's been really hard, but in another sense, it seems like just yesterday, season's coming. And I think this time of year for a college football player is really that time of year where they start seeing, okay, season's coming. The NFL, you see the OTAs going on, mini camps, and college football is on the march.
Now, Coach, I only played small town high school football, but for me, when I'm mowing the lawn and I smell the grass, doesn't matter if it's June, July, or August, in my brain, I'm going, that smells like football. I mean, that's how it is. That's got to be like that for you times a million.
I think it's exactly that. And even it's funny. I was just talking to one of my coaches about this the other day, because we have a hill near our practice facility. It's a small hill. It's probably 60 yards from bottom to top. And we sometimes will take the players over and train some speed training on the hill running, the uphill running. And it's grass. It's kind of the only time that our players get on grass. And a lot of them have never actually played the sport of football on grass,
it's
or maybe
crazy.
At least
yeah.
since high school.
Yeah, sure.
And some of them are like, man, this is itchy, because they're used to taking their shirts off at kind of at the end of the workout and finishing, getting their finishing runs in. And I said that exact thing, that this smell of grass that the players are kind of, churning up here with their cleats just reminds me of high school football, which was kind of the last time that I was in that grass. And the grass we have there, it's not a playing surface grass.
Yeah.
So it's that thick, bladed, scratchy stuff, which that's what I grew up with. Now, even, BYU was I coached there for 7 years before here. That's a natural grass stadium, but it's like a World Cup type of surface. It's a really thin bladed, very short, kind of thick grass, whereas this stuff is the real thing. The thick bladed, I think it's just orchard grass out there. It's a pasture, basically, that's mown.
Well, when it cuts, no matter what it is, when you cut it, there's an aroma that fills the air.
Right.
And
yeah.
I was mowing, it's already been 2 weeks, I got to get after it. I was just 2 weeks ago, and I'm cutting it, I'm getting it in the bag, and I seriously stopped, and I was like, this reminds me of getting almost nervous in June, because for high school, for me, small town, in like a month and a half, you're going to get ready for two-a-days and all that stuff. So in my head, I immediately go back there thinking, it's almost football season. It's something special, man. Football is always around us. It doesn't matter what time of year.
Well, you grew up on the farm, right?
So, I sure did. Yeah.
Do you taste the grass too?
I didn't taste the grass, but other things like millet and all that stuff, I would do that kind of thing, but not really the grass.
Yeah, I mean, I love going through the pastures and smelling and tasting the different types of grasses and forbs and legumes and things that are growing up through there. So, I think there is a different smell with certain grasses, right?
Like, sure.
To me, the crabgrass smells the strongest. Maybe it's got the most chlorophyll. I don't know what we're smelling. We need to bring in one of the UNC scientists that really understands this stuff.
We just do a whole thing on grass. The good grass, right? The crabgrass, the aroma must be something to it, because it's pesky. You can't get rid of it. It's almost impossible for me anyway.
I think right now it just crossed my mind. I don't know how many total people listened to this, but like 10% of them just turned it off. Like, well, what are these guys talking
about? They're like, it's
here for football.
We let them talk about grass for 20 minutes or so. That's totally fine.
Patience for grass is probably not as high as I would want it to be.
Yeah, you know, I could talk about this kind of stuff all day. It just depends on the day, you know, Coach.
I'm passionate about the grass.
Yeah, you have to be. And when you're in football, you have to be. You have to think about that. How often do you think about that kind of stuff, the playing field, though? Because we always talk about it, you know, when you're getting ready for the Super Bowl and they're like, the field conditions are rough. And then we always make it a big deal on the media side of things. When you think about an opponent and you know you're getting ready to go to their place, their turf, how much does that – what percentage of that enters your brain of they got a rough field there, or actually that feels really good? It you know, it makes guys a little bit faster too. Do you think about that?
It's just less and less every year.
Yeah.
Even the artificial surfaces 20 years ago, or even like 30 years ago when I was playing, there were vast differences between the artificial surfaces. You had the old AstroTurf style kind of matted carpet that would really burn you, but it was fast. And then I can remember playing at University of Hawaii, where it was a short style of turf, but it didn't burn. It's where they played the Pro Bowl, and so it was fast and kind of you know, at least to the skin, safer. And then you know, my senior year, we played at the University of Utah, and they had kind of a hybrid, sparse plastic grass with natural grass growing up through these perforations. And that was an awful design. The anytime you would cut the grass through the perforations would kind of shear off, and then you were playing on these sparse kind of, it was almost like an RV carpet that you'd see people kind of roll out when they pull up to an RV spot. It was horrible. And I think just it's become pretty homogenous in terms of what we play on now.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like it more
last
and more.
Last year we didn't play on any natural grass. We have a natural grass practice field, and I'd like to use it, but obviously we wouldn't really want to put a lot of practice time on a natural grass practice field if we're not playing any natural grass games.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Well, speaking of kind of just getting after it, getting on that grass and busting it, you got mandatory training that's beginning pretty much this week, right, with the mandatory side of things.
Yeah, it was actually last week.
Last week, we brought
him in. So there was Memorial Day, and then I think I talked to you about the guys all came in on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And we did we had a barbecue at my place, or it was actually a catered barbecue. I don't want to act like I was out there, you know, flipping 200 steaks or something like that. But we had a nice brisket and pulled pork barbecue. And it turned out fantastic. And then the next day we got after it. Now, you might remember going way back when we started talking about misogi and the idea of these workouts, the 316s that are designed for 50% failure. That's specifically the strategy in designing these intense workouts. So we told the guys as spring ball was winding down, look, you know, the discretionary month of May is coming, and when you come back, we're going to test these 316. We're going to take you through the same series of 316 tests. And that was really an eye opener. I mean, the guys were talking about it, asking about it, and we didn't say exactly when. So Coach Hill, our strength coach, he put a surprise on the guys, because Wednesday they were either expecting, okay, we're going to do these 316s on Saturday like we always do, and we'll kind of ramp up and get some regular workouts in, which are still really difficult. But, you know, it's over an hour and 10-minute period, and typically nobody fails our workouts, right? Whereas on Saturday, you've got this 50% failure rate because there's a time limit on it. Well, the guys rolled in on Wednesday, and Coach Hill had a monster circuit. You start on the back of the goal line, and every 5 to 10 yards, there's a new exercise. So there was a bar, a box, a medicine ball, all different kinds of bars. The weight was set up, and basically a total body, 12 reps per station all the way through. It started out that they were grouped in about sections of 4 to 5 at a time. And so if you knocked out your 4 or 5 faster than the other guys, you got a little bit of rest while the other guys finished and caught up. And then it would it would release again, and you'd have a chance to kind of pull ahead of everybody else. And so it was really a chance to see who get out front. But also, once you get out front, it's a chance to stay out front because you're a little more rested. And the guys who get behind are getting more and more tired.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was, yeah, really a struggle for some of the guys. And I heard a lot of comments like, well, I was training for the 316s. Well, that's coming too, buddy. That's coming too.
Well, and I love that too because, hey, be ready. Because in any given game, you're going to be exhausted through different ways. Maybe an offensive lineman is having just one of those games, and he has an absolute monster that he's going up against on the defensive side of the ball. He's got to be ready to adjust to that because last week was a different story. And so I love that because, hey, prepare. You have to prepare for the unexpected sometimes too.
Absolutely. And I love that Coach Hill did that. He actually texted me about 10 days before the guys got back and said, hey, is it all right? I've got some things that I want to do. And he designs the whole program. I don't want to make it sound like he's always checking with me. But, you know, he would have known that I would have had the same expectation as the players in that we're either starting right off the bat with our first 316 workout or we're getting into a regular kind of early week squat day. Hmm. Or leg day, we would call it, and then ramping up towards a Saturday 316. And I'm so glad he did it. I talked to you, I believe, about just the stimulus of those 316s and the difference the different type of strain that it puts on the central nervous system, the musculoskeletal system. It really does change the way that our body has to react when we're going through that. And so this was something that we hadn't quite done. And I think it was really, really good for that first kind of welcome week.
I think something too that we can't, I don't think we can state enough about what you guys are building at UNC is in many ways machines. I mean, guys that are just working out, you have that philosophy. Every football team works out in some capacity, you know, maybe some push a little harder than others. But that has been from day one, at least, of doing these podcasts, what I've learned the most about you is how much you and your crew are truly emphasizing. We're getting in the right shape. Lifting is going to be a top priority. Building our bodies up, conditioning, building that side, that endurance up so that we're faster, stronger, and we have that ability to last a little bit longer in these games. That is something that you guys have really been pushing on probably all your career, but especially as we get to know what you're doing with this UNC team, this past off season, it just sounds like, man, you guys are really getting after it.
On the inside, inside the business, coaches will tell you kind of exactly what they're doing and what each other are doing. So I know what other teams do and how much they're going to lift. And I've had the debates. You know, when I was Kalani Sitake's right-hand man at BYU, you know, we set it up initially at just my philosophy of, hey, we're going to be lifters first, and then let's see if we can get good at football. And we had some great success stories, guys that developed from, you know, very lightly recruited to guys that got drafted. And we had tremendous seasons and success at a high level. And then, you know, as Kalani got more comfortable, here's a name that's kind of can illustrate the story. Puka Nacua, who's just tearing it up in the NFL right now. When he transferred from Washington, he was like, hey, coach, he's telling Kalani and Kalani's brother, Fessy, who's the wide receiver coach, we're lifting way more than we did there. And I'm really sore because we're lifting before practice. And then Kalani started to say, well, geez, you know, is this one of the things holding us back? And, you know, hey, Kalani, you've got to make – my response was, you've got to make your choices, you know. And if the player feedback is kind of having you lean a certain way, I'm not going to fight to keep it my way. I know what I believe in, and we're going to lift first and then see if we can become good at football. But BYU is a lot different than Southern Utah, and it's a lot different than UNC. And so we actually changed in my last year there, and in part because Puka and some other guys. Now, the big difference, and this you know, tell you, and maybe it's why at Washington you don't do it that way, but Puka Nacua, I knew him in high school, and he looked 25 years old then. I mean, he's just always been way ahead, and he's such a competitor, and I love Puka, you know, love watching him play, love the way he competed every day. I'm not in any way criticizing Puka or BYU or Kalani. I'm just saying there's different programs that do it different ways, and we're very aware of that. Coaches don't really hide that because a lot of them, their goal is to be the freshest team in America on Saturday, to be the fastest team in America on Saturday. And obviously, you don't want to be in there grinding out squats, you know, during a game week and then try to be the freshest or fastest team in America.
How does that change when you get into the regular season? I'm always curious because I know in the off season, whatever your philosophy might be, you know, if the lifting is that's the big thing, or if it's more cardio, whatever, maybe it's a mixture of both. When you get into the regular season, I know you got to keep building. You have to keep building. You can't necessarily stop lifting and doing all those crazy exercises because you're going to lose it. What does that look like as far as game week one? Does the emphasis drop a little bit on how hard these guys are pushing? Obviously, we know on game day it's a different story, but what does a regular game day week look like compared to now as far as their workouts?
Great question. Like with COVID and other things, the science differs. The science varies. You can't just point to the science, and especially in football, because football is like the equivalent of 12 different sports going on at one time. Mm-hmm. The load on a kicker, quarterback, linebacker, offensive lineman, defensive lineman, wide receiver, defensive back, all these loads are tremendously different, right? And so how do you train a football team? So here's how we do it, because we discuss it enough with our philosophies that our science agrees, right? And when I'm saying we, I'm talking about, you know, our coaching staff, but it's mainly the strength coach and me. We've got to have a philosophical North Star or lighthouse, mm-hmm. that we know we're always going to strive toward, but we don't want to be idiots about, you know, the science, whatever that's saying. So, but here's how we do it. We come in the day after the game for what we call our flush lift, and that's a heavy squat day. It would vary and taper kind of throughout the season. There's periodization, there's undulation. It's not always going to be, hey, we're coming in doing 3 sets of 10. But that's what I would call a very aggressive squat day workout. And that right there, just from day one in terms of our work week, that's very different from what a lot of teams are doing. A lot of teams are coming in and just running striders. They wouldn't even touch the legs on that day. We feel like the science tells us that's got to be our day when we really push the legs. Monday is the player day off, and that's when they really start to feel a recovery, I believe, because of that flush on Sunday. Obviously, so we play on Saturday. We do a heavy leg day and run on Sunday. And then on Monday, that's their day off. I'm in favor of the Monday day off. We have to give the players one day a week off by rule, NCAA rule. Different coaches use different days off. Monday to me is the most rigorous academic day, and I love the idea of really being able to push that Monday as, hey, do not come in the facility. You can be in the training room, you can be in the weight room if you want, but don't come in the facility looking for game planning and stuff like that. Let the coaches do our work, and you guys do not feel any expectation to be in the facility on Monday, and really emphasize that academics. We really want to push for the guys to do a great job on Monday and get a great jump on the week. Tuesday, we come back and get a very strenuous upper body emphasis lift. And then Wednesday is actually a regen. And sometimes that looks probably most like a yoga or Pilates or blend of those. It's in the weight room. Our athletic trainer, our head athletic trainer for football is Bree Cleveland, and she's a certified yoga instructor. So there's her expertise a lot, and she enjoys doing it. She's just really good with the guys. It's hard to manage. And we don't bring all 120 in at the same time. We do it in two or three different groups. But she's, you know, it's hard for anybody to manage 40 people, much less I don't know how tall she is, but you know she's a petite gal that can get after these guys and control a whole room and set expectations. So really appreciate her expertise and experience and the way she teaches. And then we come back. Here's where it really starts to get different. A lot of teams will lift twice a week and even two hard lifts a week, but we come back on Thursday and Friday and Saturday. And we actually report into the weight room. So Thursday for us is kind of what people would probably best understand as a circuit training. And we're going to circuit train either the upper body or lower body. And here's some of like my personal science. If we're playing a game at night on the road. Okay. That means, so counting back from a Saturday night game on the road, that means we have to leave on Friday or sometime around the early afternoon, which means we have to practice on Friday morning, which means we lift on Friday morning. So that's about a 36-hour difference between Friday morning and Saturday night. So I want to lift the leg circuit on a road game at night. I want to lift the legs on Friday, and the upper body circuit would be Thursday. So we swap that upper and lower body circuit. And okay, I'm going to get really technical here.
I'm writing notes here.
The reason is for it's called potentiation from a scientific standpoint. And so you know this, or anybody that lifts weights understands this. When you first go into the gym, let's say you're doing bench press. Everybody does bench press, right?
Let's say you're doing bench press.
You wouldn't put on 90 or 100% of your one rep max and expect to do it just cold, right? And so everybody knows what potentiation feels like, because you come in and you warm up a little bit, and the next set you're stronger, and the next set you're stronger, and you build up because you're sparking your central nervous system and you're raising your potential, which is called potentiation. Mm-hmm. Well, that potentiation lasts on a rigorous workout. It lasts for about 36 hours. So you are stronger for about 36 hours after a workout.
Wow.
If you're not fatigued. Okay, so as potentiation rises, fatigue also decelerates your potentiation, because you know at some point there, you're working out all day, you're not going to keep getting stronger, stronger, stronger. We all know what that feels like, right? And so that's what we're trying to get to, is a circuit training on a Thursday and a Friday that would really spark the potentiation but not lead to more than 24 hours of fatigue. And so that's where it really comes into play, is, okay, when is the game? If we're doing a Friday afternoon lift like we do on home games, and we're doing a Saturday noon game, that's not quite 24 hours. So we really want to make sure that we're only doing an upper body circuit on a home game that's a day game.
Well,
that's a lot of information, man. Did you get it all?
I got some of it. I'm thinking about training here. Yeah. What I love about this is you hear about trainers. You hear about – we're talking about Coach Hill. And you think, oh, their job is to drive them and motivate them and just motivate them. Just get them to lift. Obviously, they know which lift and does what and how. But this is some deep science stuff here. And that is where, man, my respect factor just goes up a little bit more for – well, all coaches that emphasize this, but your trainers, your weightlifting guys, the guys that really get behind this, it's not just about screaming to get those final sets up. There is a science behind this, as far as how you prepare your body for Saturday.
Absolutely, yeah. Wow. There's a science. There's room for philosophy. I think there's room for personal experience, and it's really the same for me. Our strength coach, I have the most interaction, if you consider him a coordinator. We've got an offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, special teams coordinator, and a strength, a director of strength conditioning, which I consider like one of our coordinators. I have far more discussion, debate, brainstorming with Coach Hill, our strength coach, than I do with our offense, defense, and special teams coordinators.
Well, I mean, that makes sense based on everything we've talked about for the last several weeks, how much you're emphasizing – we're going to be strong.
Right.
That is what we're going to push for. Yeah. We are not, if we do lose a game, we don't want it to be because we were necessarily out physicaled. And I think that obviously that can be a game changer.
I'm very comfortable setting myself up for the criticism. I can almost feel people hearing this, because I've been through it before. I went through it at Southern Utah, and when we became successful, it became very much, more fashionable in the Big Sky to build a big physical team, because that's how Southern Utah was dominating the conference at that time. And, I think things have changed. Coaches have changed. That's vastly different. That's almost 10 years ago now. And then I saw it at BYU, who's got a really passionate fan base. And I'm not afraid to tell people what we're doing. I use the media to speak to our players. I'm hoping that some of our players and some of our players' parents listen to this podcast and get, even though I've said it to our players several times and our strength coaches said it, I'm hoping that for some, this is the moment when it clicks. Oh, okay. This is not the program where I can rely on talent. I have to get myself as physically developed as possible to get the full respect of this coaching staff and to get every opportunity to maximize my opportunity to contribute. And I get that every time we lose, and we just lost 11 games in a row, every time we lose, it's a fair criticism to say, well, this guy, you know, he spends all his time in the weight room. He's with the strength coach. Our offense and defense is terrible. Okay, I invite that criticism. Nobody is more critical of my performance or my team's performance than me. So I do not flinch. I know exactly where we're going, exactly where we want to go. We will be as good as we can be, and we've got the right philosophy to be successful in this conference.
Now, speaking of, you know, getting your lift on and exercise and all that stuff, I know there's only so many transfers, because I know of some and I see the rumors, but I don't want to sit here and bring up names that you may or may not be able to talk about. But there has been a pretty big name on my list because, as you know, I try to cover all five of the football teams I consider in this area as far as college football. We do talk Air Force sometimes, but specifically we talk UNC Bears, we talk CSU. Those are our top two. There's a guy for the, you know, formerly with the Rams, a running back, in Van Shield. And I kept hearing all these rumors, Coach, I was getting people message me all the time, and I'm like, I'm not going to bring that to Coach. I don't know all the rules on that stuff. But do we have some interesting news surrounding this former running back from Colorado State?
We do. Yeah, we do. And I'm glad you brought it up. I think in the next maybe the next podcast or episode or the one after, we actually have a handful of transfers.
Sure. There's a good
list
that
we should talk about. Yeah. And guys that I'm excited about, but some of them are still going through the process of their final clearance and training with us. But we do have two of the more local guys that, and you mentioned one before we got on the air too, in Hunts and Vogaser, but let's talk about Van. Yeah. Van Shield, that's a fit. That's a match right there. I've been on here countless weeks talking about we want the local guys, and the more local, the better, right? But we consider Colorado local, and especially Northern Colorado local. Van, Rock Canyon High School.
Rock Canyon, Castle Pines, Colorado. I love it.
Yep. And he so fits what we're looking for in a player. The best way I can describe it, when I watch him play, when I meet him, when I talk to him, when I look him in the eye, even when I talk to his dad who came on the visit, and they're cut from the same cloth. They talk the same. They speak the same. Dad looks like he could still play a few plays. He's like me. Like, you can tell that he's active still, but at our age, and I shouldn't count him my age. Maybe he's 5 or 10 years younger, right? But at our age, you don't have very many plays left in you. You know, just things are more brittle. But like, he's jacked, and I'm not jacked like him. But you can tell he's into fitness, he's into working out, and so is Van. Those guys really like the weight room, and Van's an effort guy. When you watch his video, it's effort. And surprisingly enough, there are college football programs that aren't really. They're not going to put that as the top priority when they're making the depth chart. And so Van has kind of bounced from Pueblo to CSU. I believe he was the leading rusher last year at CSU, maybe for the season, at least for several games.
He had, almost 400 yards rushing last year. And I know with CSU it was kind of, you know, up and down as far as who the running back was. But he's a guy that I really thought – I'll be honest, I was shocked when he entered the portal. And, of course, you just go, well, I guess – either the fit's not there, they like another guy, whatever. But I was kind of shocked by that one.
I believe we have some running. We didn't go seeking a running back transfer. I don't think we need one. I put the emphasis on need for in quotations, because we always need as many good players as we can have at every position, right? But we didn't go out and necessarily seek out one. Van was a local guy that popped up in the portal. That had, I think, a desire to build this story, right? And so in that way, it was very much a fit. But I feel really good about some of the running backs that we currently have in our program, the top two, three guys from last year, you know, in terms of David Afari and Darius Stewart, and Caden Meese came on strong in the spring and had some good games last year. And Jacquez Robertson is a guy that's probably one of the most dynamic guys, right? Hornbeek appeared last year in some games. We've got good running back room. I want to bring even more competition to that room. I want to see who rises to the top of the biggest heap. And that's what we're looking to build here is a mountain of running backs. That's what it takes to get it done. Really surprised that I mean, obviously you can't stop guys from transferring, but Van Shield is capable of being an excellent, outstanding college football player. I think he's proven that. I think it's a loss for CSU as I
sure.
see it, as I watch
I
the film.
I do too.
And I'm not I don't mean that to be critical. I guess the only reason I'm saying is I would be surprised if they wouldn't characterize it as a loss. Now, overall, they probably feel the same way I do. If a guy feels like he's a better fit somewhere else, okay, well, we've got to rebuild with the guys who want to be here. I assume that's the way CSU is looking at it. But I really think that he's a highly capable player. I would expect that he can really come in and bring a lot of competition to the depth chart. The best guys will rise to the top, and I think we do have some guys that will get NFL opportunities in that room. And at this point, it's up to them to figure out who that is.
Well, he's built, as we talked about, he's got the build. He loves, obviously, that side of what you guys are doing. And the name, I mean, Van Shield, it's just, that's a football name. Coach, you know the follow-up question, though. I'm just going to ask, do you have any depth chart?
The old depth chart.
The old depth chart thing. Yeah. As you're, because I mean, you and I, we've talked a lot about David Afari. We've talked a lot about Caden Meese too, and kind of the battles there and what they expect. I love our conversation several weeks ago about David Afari when he came to you. Said, "Coach, can we talk?" And you're like, "What is this about?" He's talking about goals and what he wants to do and accomplish next year. How do you? I know you said you want this to be an awesome competition, and we know competitions, especially at this position, usually yield some pretty good results. Where do you see Van Shield, if you can even answer that today, where do you see him fitting in as far as, you know, the allotment for carries on the running back side of things?
If we're playing tomorrow, which is completely an unrealistic scenario.
It's a stupid thing that I've made you go there.
Yeah,
so, but I do it.
The depth chart has always got to be contextually for the present, right? If we're playing tomorrow, Van's got to have one heck of a practice just to get some carries. Right?
Like sure.
to get a carry, because we've got guys we trust, guys that are proven, guys that have improved themselves from last year. You know, I'm not saying, hey, we were in the conference title hunt last year. We got a bunch of great backs. What I'm saying is you give me a name and I can go down through it. David Afari is our most complete experienced back. He has all the tools necessary to be an NFL player, height, weight, and speed. Darius Stewart has been our most vocal leader, and at times just came in and provided a spark of toughness that transcended the win, the losing. And not all of our guys were able to do that, able to keep the kind of direction in their play that would be necessary to match Darius. We call him Red. And because he's got some red hair. And so for an African-American guy, that's a little different to have a little bit
sure.
of red hair in the beard and stuff like that. But his nickname's Red. And then, like I said, you got Caden Meese, who, his approach last year, he's always been a tough guy. He's probably he exudes that toughness. But I think that last year, like his, kind of commitment level to diet, nutrition, training on a daily basis, maybe that wavered. And I'm saying maybe because I would rather have a guy discuss his own kind of journey like that.
Sure,
but he did share with me some of that stuff, and the fact that he's going into his senior year and he's got some changes. And I've talked about how what an impressive spring ball he had. Jacquez Robertson has moves like nobody on our team has. He has moves that you could put him in an NFL game and he would make some cuts where people would go, "Whoa!" Like he's different like that. You know, he's got obviously. Each of these guys has improvements in their game to make because the depth chart's a little bit flat right now. And even David, I think I would include him in that flat group. Like David has some things to prove. And the thing that I'm really looking to find out, Jordan Hornbeek is our biggest back, biggest, strongest back. What I'm looking to find out, who's going to refuse to be tackled? We didn't have that consistently last year. Can Van Shield bring that to the table? If he does, he'll rise to the top of the depth chart very quickly. If he's just fairly easy to tackle or average, an average tackler can kind of bring him down consistently, then he's just another guy in the mix. I know he's a really good back, but we have other really good backs. So it's truly up to these guys. How did I do on your depth chart question?
We'll get closer. I expected this where, hey, let's – in my brain, I'm thinking of – all of these guys, I mean, it's going to be a battle to see who's getting the bulk of the carries, who's getting two, who's getting three. But this is what you love. The fact that you can say you list every single running back and you go into their attributes and what they possess or what they provide, those are all key. But then I always hang on to a couple of keys as far as what you say. And I hear, got to break tackles. You got to refuse to get tackled. And just from what I saw last year, sometimes with Van Shield, it seemed like he might be that guy. So let's see how he carries it over with you guys going forward. Last week we talked about gold letter games, mm-hmm. right? Gold letter games. I would imagine Van Shield is circling one, a very particular football game.
Hey, that's a great point. I've had a lot of guys kind of question me, and it's really interesting. Did I ever send you the slides, the PowerPoint? For each of my speeches in the off season, it starts with the same three slides.
Yeah, you didn't send them, but you showed them to me.
Okay, I showed them to you.
Well, if you want to send them,
one of those slides is that gold letter game slide. So it lists our whole schedule, and it's got the two gold letter games in gold. And then it says GOALS, Great Ones Adjust and Lead Systems. It's an acronym. And I always say it in that context. I always say, look, I get that two wins isn't going to make our season next year. I feel like these two games early in the season, home games against teams that beat us last year, are a real litmus test of where we're going. It's going to be a bellwether for us. If you have greater goals, bring it. Bring it. I don't have to be the one to set the goals. Like, I want championships. I'm here specifically stated to win multiple championships. Two wins isn't going to do it.
Yeah.
One non-conference, one conference, it's not going to do it. These two wins would set us up for more success. So you guys adjust and lead, but don't just lead to talk about wins. Talk about leading systems. What are we doing on a daily basis to win other games? And if you want to add some gold letter games, you guys do it. This is your team. You're the players.
Is Van Shield, and we'll definitely spend some time talking about Hudson as well, because I want to talk about that linebacker room. Are these guys, they're meshing right now. They're there with the team working out and everything, so we're getting to know each other.
Yeah, Van and Hudson are two good ones to talk about because they were two of the first transfers to be completely cleared and get right in and training with the team. And and some similarities there being both local guys, Hudson being a Loveland High School guy. So yeah, they're both right in there with the team. And I think you know how it is. Anybody that goes in a weight room or plays team sports, is so quickly you're accepted into that group. Like, you're bleeding and sweating neck to the guy next to you. So I think our guys are really getting to know them quickly.
Yeah, and I imagine everybody's so used to it too, seeing new faces. But maybe if there is some reservations about a new guy and the depth chart and all that stuff, like you said, once the workouts begin and the sweat starts going, everybody's on the same side. We're just trying to get through this. And there is a bonding experience that probably just happens through that almost you almost just sweat out any kind of insecurities that you have of new guys coming in, or what are they going to be like? Are they going to be cool? Are we going to get along with these guys? Are they going to take my job? I'm going to battle back and keep fighting. It probably goes away pretty quickly once you guys get to actual work.
I think it really does. I believe there's always some healthy conflict and competition involved in all of our workplaces, where we all are competing maybe for the promotion, or there can only be one CEO, there can only be one true starter in each game, or maybe I should say leading rusher
sure.
in the case of the running backs, right? Or the guy that gets the most carries, targets, et cetera. And I think that's healthy. I think that's really part of who I am today. And, I'm not perfect. I've got things that I'm proud about the way I go about my daily life, and there's things that I want to keep striving to improve. But amongst the things I'm proud about who I am and who I've become, so many of them I can trace back to my sporting experience, and especially football, because it's such a competitive environment, and it's such a high-stakes environment. One mistake when I was growing up, one mistake in basketball or soccer is just kind of like expected. You know, it's a flow game. You lose the ball, you get the ball back.
It's a game of runs and all that.
Yeah. And football is like, you make a 6-inch mistake, and it's just critical. The ball finds it right there, you know. Or if you're on offense and you make a 6-inch mistake, you know, you just drop a pass, you fumble a football, you miss a block, and it's so visible, especially to your teammates. And there's so much preparation that goes into every game, and that pressure, that fire, that forge molded me, and that's what I'm trying to provide for these guys.
Yeah, and I love that you bring that up too, because we spend a lot of time talking about football and some of the differences there. But you're right. I mean, in some of these sports, you know, basketball, you can have 10 plus turnovers in a game. You can have a stretch where you're outscored 15 to nothing and still come back and win that thing. For football, I mean, it could be 10-7 for a good chunk of the game, and a 3rd-and-7 drop pass might be the difference. You know, diving for a first down and you come up just a little bit short, that could be the difference there. So that's why I do think it's such a special game. You work so freaking hard for that moment, for that opportunity that you're going to get. 3rd-and-7, we drew this up for you. You've been working on this since spring ball. Before that, here it is. And if you drop it, who knows what happens after that, but that can be considered in at that moment, kind of that failure. How do you respond, I suppose? But that's one of the beautiful parts about this game.
It absolutely is. You know, I would, at this point, I'm so dyed in the wool with football that I would completely fail as a basketball coach. I love basketball. Got out last night in the men's league and played with Coach Smiley, and really had a good time with him. And we're talking about our sports and talking about our summer and what things look like right now for us, regular work day, all that stuff, and how the teams are coming together chemistry-wise. Absolutely love basketball. But there's some things that I just don't appreciate. Like, so often the superstar on a basketball team is not the highest percentage shooter. And that always rubs me the wrong way, because in football you would not keep giving the ball to a guy that doesn't deliver at a high percentage. But in basketball, I guess it's like, you know, the guy who can create his own shots, does create his own shots, and then just keeps shooting. But like, I would see Kobe drop 50, but like shoot like the lowest percentage on the team that night, and like he's getting all the headlines. I'm that ain't
Steph
football.
Curry?
That's
football. Sure. Yeah. Steph Curry will shoot 18 threes and make 10 of them, you know, and it's like he's the best three-point shooter in the world. He also fires up more than anybody at a high clip, too.
Yeah. How many did he miss? You know, I'm just old school. Like, it's John Stockton for me. Like, it's you know, that speaks to a football coach. He's setting up other people for the job. He's doing the dirty work. The Dennis Rodman, the John Stockton. I'm showing my age here.
Well, right? you gotta like Nikola Jokic.
These are legends,
too, right?
Right?
You gotta be in on the Joker.
Well, yeah, and really all the big men. It relates to football because they're shooting at a high percentage, right? It's what I can't get my brain around, because number one, I wasn't a very good basketball player. And then number two, I've been coaching football for so long where it's all about percentages. What percentage of the time are you doing your job? And that's what football players live and die by.
How did the golf then with you and Coach Smiley, right? Did you get together for some golf action at some point?
We did.
That was last night. Okay. Yeah. Who's the better golfer? That's a big question.
You got to ask Smiley that question. Yeah.
Smiley says he's terrible. He said that he's not good.
Okay, he said that?
I've heard from other people, too, that he's not good. And I'm awful at golf. So when I hear a coach, a Division I coach, tell me they're not good at something athletically, I go, you're one of those guys that's like, I'm not good, but you're actually really good. But from what I hear, Coach Smiley, he's got some struggles.
Okay. A coach that is too good at golf is usually not a very good coach.
That's a good point. So way to go on that one.
I think there's a threshold, right? Yeah. But here's what I will tell you about Smiley. Like, he lives up to his name. This guy, like,
That's true.
I don't know how much golfing you do, right?
But I'm lucky if I go out once or twice a year. I'm so bad at it.
My typical golf with somebody that I don't golf with all the time is, okay, they're talking about their game. They give me their handicap. They don't play anywhere close to that handicap. And they're pissed off the whole time.
Yeah.
In terms of the golf part, we can still have good conversations maybe, but they're pissed off the whole time. Smiley, man. In football, we call it snap and clear. Like, you got your snap, you clear your mind, you go to the next snap, you clear your mind, you go to the next snap. That's him.
That's the basketball coach in him, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And he's super coachable. So last night on the first hole, We tee off, and he gets a good contact tee shot, gets good distance, nice ball flight, good shape and everything. But it was pushed out to the right, and now he's in the trees because it's at the country club. You know, typical country club golf. We got these 100-year-old trees,
sure,
or more. There's trees all over the place, and there's leaves. And so he doesn't have a shot, and so he goes, "What do you think, coach?" And I haven't played with him before, and so I'm like, "Well, how much does this guy want me to coach him?" You know, like I'm not like a scratch golfer or anything, right? But I've played with him once, one other time, and I know that that's kind of his personality. He's like, what do you think? And then he'll take the coaching. So I'm like, well, I mean, you can either kind of punch it out and give yourself a shot, or like if you got it, go ahead and line up left and cut this thing around the tree and cut it right up toward the green. And it's like a 200-yard shot, right? And I'm saying that like I got confidence in you, coach, but I'm saying there's no way he's going to do this. And he steps up and does it.
Does he? Wow.
He steps up and cuts it. He hits it low and left under the trees, and then it rises and cuts toward the green. And it trickled off the green into the bunker, so I got to be like fully honest here. But it was
epic
still
moment,
an amazing shot that any golfer would have been proud to have. You know, the pros, they don't mind being in the bunker at all. Like it's chipping a putt from there, and they're up and down. And it was kind of an amazing, just like the way he did that. And then, you know, the rest of the round, there was a lot of you know, trees and up and downs and stuff like that.
Does he shank? Does he like?
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Because that's
yeah.
my biggest thing. If I can get it in the air and it soars, I don't care if it's right, left, way off into the trees. I just want to see the ball actually soar for a while. That's my biggest thing. So, yeah. Smiley, does he have those where you're just like, oh.
Oh, he's an athlete.
Okay.
Yeah, he's, you know, he's long. He's fit. He doesn't have like, you know, they're like his swing looks good. He's fluid. And there's some shots where you're like, oh yeah, this guy could be good. He just needs to, actually, you know, reprioritize his life. And he's chosen not to do that. He's got other priorities besides golf. And as a coach, I respect that.
Yeah. No, I love it. And that's the thing. I love going out on a golf course. I think it's amazing. And you know, I'll hit five or six of them where it makes me go, I could do this, and then it's the rest of the day that destroys my confidence, and then it's back to, no, I hate this sport. I'm never going to do it. I don't want to ever participate. I am going to be in the Prairie Dog Classic thing coming up, apparently,
oh, very
so that
nice.
Should be fantastic. Before we let you get out of here, I do Hudson Vogeser, let's talk about him
yep.
a little bit too, Coach, on the linebacker side of things, formerly with New Mexico State.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about, you know, these are the two guys that I've kind of just been hearing more and more about that I think we're ready to talk about, you know, at least on the podcast. But talk to us about what you expect from this guy.
Awesome. Well, yeah, like I said, let's in the next episode or two, let's get some of these other transfers I'm really excited about. We're not trying to build the program on transfers, but here's another guy, kind of that Van Shield mold, right?
Sure, like, yeah.
Here's another guy, local guy, Loveland High School. So there was some type of connection where he ended up going to New Mexico State. Well, I can tell you from watching Hudson's high school film, he doesn't have any film from New Mexico State yet. He's still young. He's still got 4 years left. But I can tell you, he was a developmental player then. And for some coaches and players, that's kind of a, you know, a backhanded compliment, right? But that's exactly what I'm looking for, right? If we're going to be successful at a national level and in the Big Sky Conference at UNC, I believe we have to do it with developmental players. We don't have a recruiting platform right now that screams, hey, you know, we can go to California and Texas and Florida and all over the country looking to bring guys in from everywhere. We're not Montana. We're not Montana State. That's not going to be the way for us to build this program here. It's going to be with local guys. Well, if it is with local guys, it's got to be with developmental guys, because if they're local guys that are big, strong, fast, and good at football, they're going to CSU or they're going to Colorado, right? Or somewhere else. They're leaving the state. Well, this guy, long, fast, developmental. He's got to continue to do some work in the weight room, strength, size, and he's going to be a guy that in the next couple of years, people are going to say, where did UNC find this
guy? Where'd that guy come from?
Because he has all the tools to be an elite college football player with the length and the speed, and he's a fantastic attitude guy. Just, I mean, from the moment I met him on the visit, I thought, that's the exact energy we need around here. That blend of kind of energy, smile, sense of humor, humility that is really difficult to raise. And so I, you know, want to commend his parents and him and who he is. It's just, and I think our players sense that already. Like, okay, yeah, this guy's got some stuff, but he's not coming in here strutting like, look at me, I came from New Mexico State. I'm coming from the FBS level. He's coming in saying, I need a fresh start. I need a new place. this is the place. Hey, guys, I'm here. Here's my name. I'm ready to work alongside of you. And it just, I think he's made just a great impression from the beginning, and really impressed with who he is now and what he can be as a football player.
Do you see now, we talked about Van Shield, and hey, he's just going to be in the thick of things where he could have an opportunity to get a lot of carries, or who knows? When you look at Hudson, what do you see as far as, you know, envision at least for like his direct impact as soon as next season?
Well, because he's a young transfer, we don't really consider him, you know, like Van's getting toward the end of his college football career. He's racked up the seasons at this point. And, you know, we wouldn't take on a guy like that if we didn't expect him to jump right into the starting lineup. In Hudson's case, and really all, even the true freshmen that are coming in, we don't redshirt as a policy. We don't plan on guys not playing. But then again, we don't want to put like an unrealistic expectation. I believe Hudson can be a dominant big sky linebacker, and that could happen this year, and that it could be next year. He's in my opinion, he probably needs to really compete with our starting linebackers. He needs to get 10 pounds on before training camp, 10 pounds of muscle, and he's got that frame to do that, and he could do it very quickly. But it's, you know, it's how his body responds and whether or not he has any setbacks and stuff like that. But I do feel like he'll certainly be on the travel squad and competing for the starting job.
I'm excited about these guys, too. Just getting more insight from you on both of them, Van Shield, Hudson Vogaser. And I know, like you said, we're going to have more guys that we can talk about that we feel comfortable talking about on the podcast format, too. So I appreciate you going there. It sounds like, hey, if a guy needs to gain 10 pounds of muscle, this is the program that's probably for him. I mean, just based off everything we've talked about.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah, that's the part we don't let slip. That's the part we don't let slide. You know, I don't know. Maybe this is a place, you know, that's people are going to come looking for players because we're developing them in that way. But I believe it's the way to be successful here. And hopefully, though, you know, our guys are sticking around until they accomplish what they need to accomplish here. And there's a lot of rule changes, adjustments coming in terms of how we keep players. You know, Smiley and I were talking about last night, I guess a lot of the basketball coaches are starting to talk about the kind of the European soccer or European basketball model where you have a lot of different pro leagues. Well, okay, if a guy outgrows one pro league, good for that player. He's going to go to the next level. But there's a payment that goes back because it's all contracted, right? There's a payment that goes back to that smaller club, and now they have a chance to kind of rebuild with a dollar amount. And I think that's probably coming to football and basketball. If a UNC player feels like that they've developed to the point where they can go be a Power 5 guy and they're going to make $600,000 or something like that,
Yeah. Okay,
we don't want to hold that back. And we want to start to take some pride in that, if that's the reality of the situation, the rules as they currently are. But I think it's time that if USC is going to be taking players from UNC and they're going to be paying those players a hefty amount of money, well, okay, let's kick that.
It's like a buyout kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that idea. And I think it would slow it down a little bit too, because if you're USC or whatever, you're only going to, I mean, sooner or later, you can't just keep throwing money around. If you're throwing money at a kid and then suddenly you got to do the buyout kind of thing, I really think that's a fascinating concept.
Well, the money is probably almost unlimited at some of these schools. But here's the thing that's also coming that's going to make some major changes. Those schools that do have the unlimited money or unlimited money, they're collecting depth. And a lot of these players are going to find that out when they get there. Yeah, I'm very good, but so are my teammates. And now the NCAA is talking about removing scholarship limits. Mm. And so you're not just going to be competing like in basketball just for simple numbers. You're not just competing here with 5 or 17. There might be another 17 that aren't even, you know, on the bus. And they're just stockpiling players because they have the money. When you talk about the difference between USC and a Long Beach State, you know, it's all Division I, or a UNC, it's all Division I. It's all the same level of competition, but it's not a fair playing field. And so that's the part that I think the pendulum has to swing back, where players start to realize, okay, this is great. I can transfer. I can go wherever I want, whenever I want, and I can even get some money. But am I in this to play the game or not? And there's going to be, I think, a lot of really good players at the high level programs that aren't playing.
Both of those concepts
in my mind, they're pro prospects
that aren't getting
the development that they need to make the pros.
You go get lost in a depth chart somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the thing. It's like, hey, we talked about this several weeks ago where they're looking for depth guys. Especially any sport, but football. I mean, I know Coach Saban would have loved to have Tua and Jalen Hurts both on his football team, you know,
right.
Star quarterbacks. They want as many good players as they possibly can, even if they get lost and don't see the field. And so this is where players have to look at that and say, do I want to go make 20-some thousand, 50,000, 100,000, but that's my career. I'm just a third-string guy on the depth chart, and I never play, or do I want to have the story? And again, it depends on who you are as a person and what your situation is, but do you want to be able to say, hey, I was out there, I played, I competed at a very high level, whether that was at the FCS or the FBS?
Absolutely, and that's why I'm staying very on top of, with my contacts, my connections, paying attention to what's going on, I'm staying very on top of what is the going rate for a power school starter. And I'm talking to our guys about that. It's reality. I'm not going to put my head in the sand and act like that my guys aren't getting offers or won't get offers. And the more success we have, the more that's going to happen. What I want to make sure is that our guys aren't, you know, $20,000 sounds like a lot of money to a guy this age, but do not trade your development as a pro prospect or even your life story as a football player. Don't trade that for $20,000. Now, we get into $300,000. That's the going rate right now. Now, this next team is expecting you to start, and you now have jumped the political line because now this position coach has paid $300,000 to get you there. He needs to make you the starter to justify his expense.
Sure. You're darn right. Yeah.
When he brought you in for $20,000 a year, he just wanted you for depth, and our players really need to know that. And so I'm trying to do a great job of staying on top of it, staying on top of the dollar figure amounts, and educating our players so that they can make good decisions. I support all the decisions that they make. I just want them to be educated decisions.
I think that's the way to go about it, Coach. And I love, maybe one of these episodes we can really do a deep dive into the NIL stuff too. Maybe next week for us though. If we can, we'll talk more about some of the incoming guys from the transfer side of things. If we can, we'll get to some more of those players. I'm looking forward to it.
That sounds good. I appreciate you getting us back on track. Because, you know, the other thing, it's hay season right now for me. So I'm cutting, baling, raking hay.
Full circle.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, like, I was like, man, because I can go there and really start. I get passionate about that, you know. And then obviously as football season gets closer and closer, I'm like, what are we talking about? Hey, you know what I mean? I don't want to talk about hay. I don't want to talk about
it's summertime. I'm debating whether or not for the whole show, whether we do a weekly sports movie review or not, because I can only talk about the Rockies losing 13-3 so much, Coach.
Yeah.
So this has been very therapeutic for me because we can talk football, we can talk hay, we can talk grass, whatever. But I gotta put together a 3-hour show today. And thankfully, the WNBA is giving me stuff to talk about too. So that'll be fun.
That's a new development.
That's a very new development. Still haven't. I have not watched a game this year, but there's a lot of content there. So we're gonna ride with it for a little bit. We'll see what happens.
At some point, you're going to get some pressure to watch a game and be able to publicly state that. You may have got some hate.
I did yesterday. Yeah. I know that. I honestly want to watch the Caitlin Clark. I say the Caitlin Clark game. See, that tells you everything. The Fever game on Friday, but it's on ION. I don't even know what that is. What is that? Is that a channel? How do I find it? I'm a 90-year-old man, basically, when it comes to this stuff. So good luck to me.
Mitch Williams is our video guy. He's our IT guy, video guy. He's a football employee. And, you know, all day long, you can hear me. When something goes wrong, television-wise, computer-wise, Mitch! You know, like, he's and he comes in and fixes it in like 3 seconds, right?
But I need Mitch then, because
I
got to
no
figure
idea
this out.
What ION is.
Don't know. Want to watch? I do it Friday night. I'm like, I want to see how if she bounces back, because she had a really bad game the last game out. And there's a lot of negative, positive drama surrounding her. So I want to see how she bounces back. Angel Reese got ejected last night. How does Caitlin Clark respond with all this stuff? So I'm always fascinated by it. See what I mean? It's June. We got to find stuff.
Yeah, I'm glad.
Coach, always appreciate this, man. Fun show today, talking about the workout side of things, you know, as you guys are shifting some gears here. And then some very interesting players, Van Shield and Hudson Vagasor. I'm pumped to see how they turn out and what that ultimately looks like for some key positions on the running back side and the linebacker side. So thanks for going there with us, and we're getting closer. Episode 19 next week, so looking forward to that one.
Well, on that march to the Big 20.
Big 20 coming up. All right, Coach, appreciate you, man. Maybe I'll go out there and make Smiley feel good about his golf game. I'll go with you guys sometime because, boy, if you want a guy to get some confidence, watch me golf for a little bit.
That'd be a blast. I've only golfed with one pro golfer, Tony Finau, and he's so calm and like, and obviously he's golfing with football coaches, so he didn't like, he wasn't going to get all frustrated. But you can even see when you listen to his interviews and when you watch him play, he's a relaxed, calm, stoic personality. I would much rather golf with guys like that and a Steve Smiley any day than some guy that's out there hacking it up just like me, but acting like they're normally a scratch guy.
That will not be me. I will tell you I'm terrible, and then you'll see it and you'll go, man, he was not lying about that. He is an honest guy. I'll give him that.
Yeah, that old, I just can't putt today. You know? Yeah, come on, man. Like,
wind is off today,
yeah,
Coach.
If you could do it all, you'd be on the tour. Like, we're all the same. Like, we can all hit shots.
I will say, you met Tanner, our friend Tanner. I know you guys are going to try to golf at some point.
Yeah.
Anytime I actually do hit a good shot, the one out of 50 tries, you know, one out of every 50 tries, I'll look over at him every time without fail, and I'll say, it's a simple game, really.
Yeah.
And of course, it kills because they're like, dude, you have been in the water the entire day. But
you
have to have
when
fun.
You can.
You got to take advantage of those opportunities. Coach, appreciate you, my friend. We'll get back at it next week. Always look forward to these conversations. I love it. Football 52, episode 18, 19, right around the corner. Appreciate you, Coach.
Thanks, Brady.